Live from the Pathway Studios in Johnston proper, you are Live from the Path.
And you're listening to Live from the Path on livefromthepath.org. How's everybody doing? How's everybody doing today?
I'm doing fantastic.
I'm doing good.
Pretty good myself.
I like the enthusiasm of this crowd tonight. I feel like everybody's uptown, everybody's hanging, everybody's happy.
I feel like it's over the top.
Okay, Dan's, he says too much. He can't take much more than this. It's too much enthusiasm.
I feel like I need some coffee.
Yeah, okay.
I don't drink coffee.
Okay, Dan, thanks. You're listening to Life from the Path on livefromthepath.org. We got, I like to call it a sling blade of a show for you. I'm not even going to expound on that. You just take that for what it's worth. But here's what we're going to talk about. There was an article put out. I haven't done much of the research about it. I've just read the article and thought I'd give you our opinions on it because that's the way the show operates. So, but it's basically an article called Why You Should Stop Going to Church. It's time to bail. What is it?
Ouch.
Well, so we're going to...
Who put this... I mean, is it coming from a Christian perspective, a non-Christian perspective?
No, it's coming from a Christian perspective.
Definitely. Okay, gotcha.
So we're going to talk about that. Well, Boova's also got some Pope-style advice. He's hinting that it might be a bit heavy.
Indeed. It should be interesting. I try and stray away from the heavy ones a little bit. I try and do the whole positive, happy-go-lucky ones, but... This one's going to be a little less happy-go-lucky and a little more weighing on your heart.
Ouch.
I will be the counterpoint with the positive upturning spin.
And it's going to feel weird for all of us.
I will have a box of Kleenex ready.
We also have some Dear Life from the Past ready, and we're also joined in studio by a special guest, Tessa Lugo. Tessa, how are you doing this evening?
I'm good. How about yourself, Mike?
Here's what I'm looking forward to. I'm looking forward to a female perspective on some of this Dear Life from the Past advice.
Yeah, we are not strong always on the feminine perspective. Sometimes we're like guys in a locker room going, "Eh, kick him."
Thanks, Dan. So,
got it.
Thank you very much for joining us. We're looking forward to spending the evening with you, and we're gonna go ahead and get fired right up here. And so here's the article. The article is I originally found it on First Love Ministries. It was sent to me by somebody, and it's kind of long, so I'm going to try to truncate this down a little bit. So I'm going to go ahead and fire up. It's called Why You Should Stop Going to Church. You shouldn't be going to church. Surprised? Well, I mean it. Our culture has completely misunderstood what it means to be a follower of Jesus because of this common practice. It is hurtful, it is unfruitful, and it's just plain unbiblical. What I mean is this. When our culture talks about church, they're talking about a place or an obligation. It's part of our vocabulary. People say, "What church do you go to?" And we reply, "Oh, the big brick one on 4th Street, you know, with the cross on top." We've come to measure our devotion to God by how often we step into a building we call church. We go to church. And there are all sorts of wrongs that flow from that practice. Here are just a few. One, if you go to church, you'll think that that place is a Christian's purpose. You'll measure yours and others' devotion to God by how often they show up to a building. If someone stops showing up, you'll assume they've fallen away. If your life gets busy and you miss a couple Sundays, you'll feel like you've failed as a Christian. If bad things happen in your life, your theology will tell you, "Maybe if I would have been going to church, this wouldn't have happened." And then you'll promise to make up for it by going back. Two, if you go to church, you'll get into the habit of checking God off your to-do list. You'll start having an "I did my time" attitude toward God. You'll think that as long as you show up and the preacher seems happy that you're there, then you did your God time. This causes you to be completely okay with not spending an ounce of time with Him in your actual life. Your Bible can collect dust and you can go all week without praying, but you did your time on Sunday, so it's okay. Didn't you know that God loves you and wants a relationship with you? That when you draw close to Him, He reveals more and more about your heart and you become yourself? It's so beautiful and we're missing it because we did our time on Sunday. Three, if you go to church, you'll rarely serve the elderly, visit the sick, or comfort a widow because that's the leadership's responsibility. Whew, I like this. It's their job, right? That's what they get paid for, even if they are volunteers. They volunteered to do this stuff. You look at the visits, youth, children, mission reports, and instantly blame the leadership if these things are not being done enough, all while being content with your simple Sunday attendance. Did you know that you don't pay church staff to do ministry? I mean, they do ministry, but that's not what you pay them for. You pay church staff to organize ministries, offer opportunities for ministries, and through the worship services and messages, inspire the people in the church to do the ministries. You pay them to do specific counseling and services, like weddings and funerals, or use their talents in music. So, when the Bible talks about the church, it is talking about a community of believers. It's not talking about a house or a building. It really, really never is. The Greek word for church is ecclesia, which means congregation, assembly, a group of people gathered together. In the New Testament, the word church is never, I repeat, never a building or a place. It's always a group of people. It's used to describe a body of believers in a certain area, like the church in Corinth, a group that meets in a home in China, whatever. The universal church, it talks about everybody. So, let's get this straight really quickly. I do not want you to go to church. I want you to be the church. Your thoughts, fellas?
I agree 100%.
I also agree. I think that this is completely hitting the nail on the head when it comes to the common church and the churches we talked about it today. I agree entirely when it comes to the fact that the church can become a checkbox. Church is looked at as an hour on Sunday, and then God is checked off. I believe that it is completely on the follower to avoid this entirely. This is something that needs to be checked at a personal level and dealt with.
Is it a problem that it has made its way through tradition, through past, you know, through experiences that have led people to not take responsibility for faith? How do we even get here?
I think it's laziness. I think we have not made disciples. I think this is what it boils down to. It's really this thing that we've been really kind of digesting recently, just on, I don't know, some on the show, but just a lot on the side too, a lot of conversations, is we've not made disciples. We've made people that we entertain, and so we've taught them, you come to church and then you leave and you do whatever you want, as opposed to you are the church, you are part of the body, you are part of the community. That means you do meet together in gatherings on Sunday mornings, whenever the church meets. But that's not, you're not going to church. You are being the church together. That means you are devoted to the apostles' teaching and to prayer and to the breaking of bread. I mean, all the things that are in Acts 2 that we talk about so often. And we have disconnected that somehow. And we make a convert. Hey, now you're saved, and then you do what you want. You can jump through these hoops, rather than saying, no, this is how you are a disciple. You do all these things. And somehow we've disconnected it from the process of being a believer, what a believer is.
Do you feel like the setup that most of us are striving for, and actually we're in the kind of the midst of this now, like of obtaining a church building and setting up a certain amount of opportunity for ministry, like you're inherently causing some of these problems? You're inherently setting a standard that is counterintuitive, counteractive to the going forth of the gospel. We're giving too much fluff and not enough punch.
I think the church as a whole is doing that for sure. Having a building and having a place to come and you know, put your butt in a seat and then leave is possibly facilitating some of that, but at the same time, it's on the congregation itself and not necessarily just the leaders, but the hands and feet of the church to avoid that, to eliminate that. We have hands and feet of the church, and that exactly points to the fact that it's not just a place that you go and sit down. You can't have hands and feet of the church and the body of Christ, which is the church, and be there just to sit. That's where the ministries come from. That's where the fruits of the labor comes from, where we as believers are to take, you know, the congregation, the 1 hour every Sunday that we meet, and then we have it on ourselves to, you know, we have our community groups, we have our small groups, we have our individual fellowship with the families we meet with. Mm-hmm. We have the outreach that we have with ministries, working with kids, working with the communities, working with all different kinds of people.
Yeah, that building should be a launching pad,
right?
Not a resting pad. And that's kind of where we have allowed ourselves to reverse that a little bit.
Yep.
Yeah.
The whole, just cliche family, we go to church on Sunday,
yeah,
and then there's nothing else throughout the week, you know.
And if it's a special week, we have a potluck dinner
right,
at church
exactly.
building. Yeah.
Yeah, we have a gathering on Wednesday,
yeah,
and that's it. Mm-hmm. And you know, I spend more time at work than I do with God and yeah, with my fellowship and with my church family and the congregation itself. I'm spending more time or less time, you know, doing that hour long church thing to make the checkbox. I'm a believer for the week. I went to church.
Now, is the so I guess I would submit, like most of the stories that you hear from third world countries or even countries where Christianity is not even allowed. You know, you hear very exciting missionary tales that, you know, of how the gospel is spreading through basic grassroots. No frills, just talking about the gospel. Are we inherently setting up our own roadblock most of the time? Dan.
You mean through the process of having like a church building and a place where a service, a church service type thing?
Well, yeah, I guess maybe have we set a bar that we're only meeting because that's what we're used to meeting.
Yeah.
Not necessarily that the building is inherently wrong. The chat has made a couple good points of that the building is supposed to be the launching platform where we start. But have we taken the idea of what a building is and what a church are you feeding? Are you feeding the hungry for their own ideas? You know, if they want a building and they want a place of established worship with some history and some culture and some fortitude to it, and it's really none of that is what they need. Have we helped create that?
Yeah, it seems like we program around the idea of, well, we don't want to expect too much out of you. But it's not our expectation. It has nothing to do with us. Who do we think we are? You know, well, we're a pathway church. We define Christianity. No, we don't. You know, Jesus said, no, I want all of you, every ounce of you. I want every breath, every step, every moment. You get in community with my body, and that's like not physical body, the body of Jesus Christ, the church that we're talking about, the community. And it should be something that consumes you. It's part of – how do you separate yourself from it? It's we're family. You know, and we have allowed it to not be. We've allowed it to be, like you say, a service.
Yeah,
a worship.
The church has turned into the building
a
itself.
Concert.
Right. To continue talking about the building itself, we have been programmed as, you know, a church society. We'll call it that, not necessarily just a secular society, but as a church society, we've been programmed to think the bigger the church, the better the church. The bigger the church building, the better the church. Oh, we see those mega churches, and you know, not to pinpoint any one of them, but the huge churches that have got, like, you know, thousands upon thousands of square feet and acres, and, you know, they have this facility, and they must be, you know, really doing God's work. Mm-hmm. And they must really be doing God's thing because they've got a huge building, and that's not what it's about.
Yeah.
You know, there were countless sermons that Jesus did himself that weren't in a building.
Yeah, he found crazy places like a mountain.
Yeah, exactly. A sermon on the mount. Hanging out in a town square next to a well.
Yeah.
You know, doing all these different things. He didn't – it talked about, obviously, him going to the synagogues and doing his thing, but that wasn't the basis of his ministry.
He's walking down the road. Hey, consider the lilies of the field. I mean, you know,
right, exactly.
There they are. They're like, yeah. Let's talk about me. I was going to say, let's talk about Jesus. It was him.
Right.
So, yeah.
Exactly. You know, we've programmed ourselves, I would agree entirely, that the church building, that's the concept.
Which
once
is probably laziness, don't you think?
Yeah. Oh, absolutely.
The generation prior to us, maybe, I don't know why I haven't studied it that closely, the church history, this part of church history, but somewhere along the line, it became acceptable to build a little building and put us all in these little wood hard things that we sit on and watch the show for an hour,
right,
and watch the orator, you know, tell us their wisdom, rather than I've always imagined, like, in the first century church, them then huddled in homes and corners and wherever they were, and just whoever was there is like, hey, this is what I got from God today, and talking Jesus, and there's something organic and pretty exciting about that to me.
It was a community. It wasn't just one person standing in front of everybody the entire time, at all times, preaching. It was a community of believers who firmly believed in the love of Jesus Christ and the blessing we have through Him, and then went out, you know, calling in the Great Convention to go make disciples of all nations, baptizing all in the name of the Father, the Son, and the Holy Spirit. They took that to heart, whereas now a lot of Christians forget the whole die daily to yourself and take up your cross daily. You know, we skip that thought where we're just like, you know, I went to church on Sunday, so I'm all set.
I've given my all.
Yeah, exactly. Even, you know, I tithed and I went to church. Awesome. You know, I'm never going to tell you that's a terrible thing. But what else did you do?
Yeah.
What did you do on Monday? Where were you Tuesday? How did you live through? How did Christ live through you on Wednesday, Thursday, Friday, Saturday, the whole week?
We have allowed an inauthentic, fake Christianity to exist, and we've taught it.
We have created masks
we created
to put on.
I'm part of the people who did that. I'm a preacher. You know, now there is a place for preaching. That being said,
right,
and for public preaching and proclamation. You know, we're not saying that doesn't happen. We're just saying that's just the tip of the iceberg.
Yeah, it's one piece of it.
Of what a week looks like for a Christ follower.
Yeah, so I guess my main question is how does the change get made? Like, there's something obviously, you know, that needs to be done, and I'm not saying the building needs to get the boot. You know, maybe the tennis court can get the boot.
Oh, but we need that.
We have to have the basketball court,
It's too. A ministry outreach.
People who swim won't be able to love Jesus if we can't have this pool here.
What about our horse track?
We need to have 4,000 parking spaces or Jesus can't work here.
And here's the thing. There's nothing wrong with building a building that glorifies God. Like, God built his own temple. Like, and it was a nice temple.
Yes, yeah. It was.
It turned out pretty all right.
You know, it was pretty big.
And so there's nothing wrong with that. I'm not picking on period architecture. I'm not picking on old Catholic buildings. I'm not picking on whatever building your church currently meets in.
Right, right.
I guess the main poise of what I'm getting at is like, if we're really trying to push the idea of to be the church and not go to a church and stop attending a church, but to be part of the church, you know, can we purvey that idea better besides instituting another program of called Class 107, How Not to Attend Church? You know what I'm saying? Like, yeah. like how do you home grow that? How do you get forth that message without creating another pamphlet?
I agree with Dan's original point. It's discipleship. It is not being okay on an individual basis of your walk with Christ being the hour on Sunday. We cannot give into that norm. We cannot give into that. As a church body, and I mean not just a church at this place or this place, I'm talking about the body of Christ in general, we need to push past the traditions that we've created of laziness. We do need to become honest disciples of the love of Christ. And then from that, we won't have people that are coming just on Sunday. Yeah. You can't have heart on fire for Christ and show up for an hour on Sunday and that is it. I challenge you to have a heart that is truly on fire for your God and just come on Sunday mornings and that's it. Don't do any serving. Don't do anything. You come for a donut or a biscuit, whatever. You get your glass of OJ and sit down for an hour. I challenge you to be on fire for God and be able to do that. I can't imagine.
It's pretty hard. That's why we have created a generation that probably the last 20 years, really, that they just shift from church to church, and whatever is providing the best entertainment at that time is what they're about. And I should say what we're about, I mean, because I don't want to make it like you, not me. And every church out there is out there going to conferences to learn how to have a cooler band and to speak cooler or, you know, whatever, more relevant. And, you know, if I just have a tattoo, that'll be good. You know, whatever. I mean, it's just.
Actually, I was thinking about getting a tattoo.
Just so you could be cool for God?
Because I'd like to be more relevant.
I need some cool print t-shirts that I can wear on Sunday mornings and everybody go, oh, that guy's really cool. He gets it. And, you know, that's one of the big jokes, I think.
Yeah.
I mean, you know, it's like, come on. It's we have neglected it being a life and a total transformation of self, a new creation. We're just, hey, we just want an hour of your week.
How long do you wait before you hit them with that?
Before they convert.
Before they...
That's the problem. We've been going for conversions. We've been making sales. Hey, now you're saved. Now come to church. It's like, no, here's the deal. You want to be part of this community. It's a community. You decide. It means we're not stressing numbers. We're not trying to be the biggest church in town. We're trying to be obedient to Jesus and say, whoever wants to come on this ride, it's hard. It'll hurt. It's the most challenging thing of your life. If you have the guts, come on. If not, there's a church down the road that'll entertain you.
That's exactly what I think, too. You know, we, not necessarily pointing at one specific church once again, but we have...
But the Lutherans.
It's those guys.
Those guys. No. I think that there are so many people that are one of the extremes. You're either 100% lovey-dovey, God loves you, and it's going to be fun. It's going to be great. You know, you're not going to have any turmoil once you turn to God. That's what we preach. Or... you're a sinner, you're going to hell, come to God. Both of those are true. God gives us joy. God gives us the comfort that he can give us. He doesn't promise us an easy time, but he promises us joy. That's one of the fruits of the Spirit. And at the same time, we are promised eternal damnation for our sins. But it's not one or the other. It's got to be a combination of the two. We need people to realize wholeheartedly that when you come to God, you are going to have to sacrifice things. And when they turn and not convert, but when they actually turn to God and get a heart for God, it's not a surprise when, oh, wait a minute, this isn't easy.
Right.
And then they leave when they find out that it's not an easy thing.
The chat offers up so the questions that were asked on the chat were basically the same that we're asking here. And you know, how does the change happen? And the chat put forth that it takes repentance and change, repentance and faith, which, I mean – That was John the Baptizer's message. That was Jesus' message. That was Paul's message. Who else do you need to hear it from?
That's a message I have had to confront myself with in the past year and a half or so. Really looking at, I've been doing this for 29 years. Okay, I've been doing church. And my entire ministry has been an attractional ministry. If you just have the coolest donuts, we started out with Krispy Kremes at Pathway, you know, and we put this, so we could put that on the advertising on the mail card that we sent out, you know, and we hired in musicians to come in and be cool, a cool band, and we did everything to be cool. But since I'm not that cool, it didn't turn out all that cool.
I was going to say, Dan, you were the cool one bringing them in.
There was a problem in that plan. But what I'm saying is everything was about what will be attractive, you know, and it's like, I've been really confronted lately with, I don't remember Jesus ever doing that.
Yeah, he's pretty hard.
he really attracted him when he called out all the Pharisees, right?
Yeah, exactly, you brood of vipers. I mean, he attracted them by being God, for one thing, but his authentic and true and no-holds-barred message of, hey, you pick up your cross and follow me, you can come. Some of you can't handle it. Why don't you go ahead and leave? And they did. You know, I mean...
I guess
that's been tough for me because I'm still processing that.
Well, I mean, I think it's actually kind of it's not like it was a false idea to try to find people who didn't know Jesus and get them to church, right? But it almost felt
it's lazy.
It is lazy. It's lazy because I used to do the same thing. I'm like, I never invited people to a relationship with Jesus Christ. I always invited them to church.
Yeah,
and I just thought I don't know what to do with them, The preacher will handle it from here, or one of the old ladies will smile at them, and then they'll make friends and whatever. Like, there's nothing else I can do. If I just get them in the building, God will be happy with me, right?
Yeah, I've done my job.
That's terrible theology, one. That's putting God's love in a real small box. That's taking the responsibility right off me and throwing it on Ethel, who's probably been working on 10 casseroles this week and doing her part of the ministry, you know, and I bring another dude in and throw him on Ethel and say, hey, minister to this man. I got him off the street somewhere. Like, that's terrible. That's not personal discipleship, and that's barely showing love for that guy, right? If I cared enough, it's just like with your kids. You know, let's say that especially, I mean, Dan knows this. You know, let's say you're raising a little girl. You could really care less about playing Barbies. You're not interested, but you learn because you love your daughter, right? The same thing's true when you go talk to a guy about Jesus Christ. You learn about Jesus Christ not only for your own personal relationship with him, but if you want to tell somebody about him, you better know. You don't just take him to somebody else and go, here, now he's somebody else's problem. You invest in him just like Jesus invested in you and that you've invested in your other relationships and say, here's where I'm concerned at, here's where I love you, here's where Jesus loves you, and here's where we need to do some talking, and I love you too much just to pawn you off on somebody else. Why don't you and I do this? Mm-hmm. And we can do it now, we can do it later, we can do it over coffee, I don't care. Right? But I love you enough to do this.
And it intimidates us because we have not been discipled ourselves, so we don't know how to disciple someone else. So what do? You get into the Word of God and start learning. Find someone who's a little further down in the road than you are and say, hey, will you teach me what you know? And they'll say, I don't know. You know more than I do. That's all I know. You know. And you find someone who knows a little more than you do and start moving forward.
By the way, Mike, I talked to Ethel, and she's really sick of you dumping people on her. She just wanted me to tell you that.
Yeah, I'm working on it.
She told me she was going Baptist. She couldn't handle the pressure.
She told me specifically, I'm really sick of that Mike Foose bringing people in and then just saying, hey, I brought this guy off the street. Can you take care of him?
I can't keep up with the
pie.
She's
got a lot of casseroles to make.
Some of the quick suggestions from the same article said, here's what happens when Christians stop being going to church and be part of a church. One, if you are the church, you'll recognize that following Jesus means doing the things he did. Pick up the cross and follow me. That is not an easy task. That is a big statement. John 14:12 will give you basically the entire breadth of what's going on there. But it does mean that, right? If we look at Christ and use him as our example of someone who lived and did not sin, yeah, that's what we're going for, right? It's inherent in the design. We're going to fail that, but that's still what we're going for. And so if that's not what you're after and that's not what you're attaining to, if you're just trying to surfboard your way into heaven, you're missing it. You're missing it. You're going to church. You're not part of the church. It's not what Christ asked us to do. Two, if you are the church, you'll know the things Jesus did because you will seek him and read about him and talk to him often because you love him. You will meet with him often. You won't just do this on Sunday. Frankly, I do most of my talking with God not on Sunday, right? Because I've known Christ long enough that I serve on Sunday. That's what I do. And so it's not that I don't listen to the message. I do. It's not like I don't participate in worship. I do. But, like, you know, I can have a lot of fun with my wife at a Van Halen concert. I have a lot more fun with my wife by ourselves when I'm talking to her in our living room because I have a relationship with her and it's close, it's intimate, right? And the same thing does not happen at Van Halen because, one, Van Halen is – you can't be trusted. You know what I'm saying? Who knows what kind of show they're going to put out this year when they finally get the lead singer from Heart. Who knows what they got going. But what I'm saying is, like, corporate worship has its place because we all right. love and adore a God that has provided us with blessings that we can't count. But frankly, it can't be replaced by a personal relationship.
And it's a good first step if you understand that's your first step, not your last step.
Right.
Most people make that, you know, that's their, they, I finally have arrived, and now it's my last, that's all I need to do.
I've been coming to church for 80 years,
yeah,
I'm okay.
Yeah, yeah. Like, because you move into a community or something, and you're like, well, you start getting to know people by, you know, maybe going to the church service, and you start connecting and get serving and doing things. And so, yeah, I mean, like you say, it's an essential part, it's a good first step, but you move on.
You're listening to Life from the Path on lifefromthepath.org. We got a couple more points we're gonna list real quick here. Number one, number four, what you obviously do is if you are the church, instead of going to church, you will pray for your leaders and participate in the ministries they organize. Here's the deal. This irritated me when I started going to churches other places, and frankly, it happened here a little bit, but like people come up with grand schemes like we're going to go feed the homeless, and then they'll call the pastor or whoever leads their small group and be like, hey, I want to go lead the homeless. Can you get us some money? Or can you cook some meals for us and then we'll take them down there? And like, you know, I feel like you're missing the point.
I got it arranged. You can take it down there for us at 6 o'clock.
Yeah, just why don't you just go do it? Why don't you take another guy that is not the pastor and say, hey, Steve, we're going to go down there and feed the homeless. You want to go? Yeah. Should we tell Dan? No. What does it matter? Why do we got to tell Dan? I don't know. Can we get a sign that says Pathway Church is doing this? No. Can we just be God's people out helping people? You know what I'm saying? We're not an advertising agency. And yeah. We don't need a pitch. We don't need a slogan. We don't need like 50 grand pats on the back because God's church is doing great things. Here's the deal. We serve an awesome God. So we should be expected to be doing great things. And so if they walk by and see us not doing great things, I feel like the outgoing public should rebuke us and say, why aren't you doing great things? You claim to know such a great God. And so, like, I used to do this, but that really kind of irritates me a little bit when people are like, we should get the church to blah. That's like basically saying, I should blah. You know what I'm saying? You've just taken your own name out of it and sacked it on 10 other guys. Because here's the movers and the shakers, the guys that'll get things done, they're already busy doing something else. And so when you come up with 15 ideas and throw them at five guys who are already burdened with everyone else's 30 ideas, I wouldn't expect a whole lot to get done. And that's what happens. The church gets bogged down. VBS stinks because you didn't want to take over any part of the ministry. We can't go out and feed the homeless. We can't seem to have traveling missionaries in because no one wants to house them. All these things because no one would raise their hand and say, I am the church. You're right. I'm on this thing. You know, we could use a little more gumption in that area. Let's see. The last thing I think that if you want to make this part of your life and it's not just something you want to let pass, here's what you're going to do. You're going to pray. You're going to pray for your leaders. You're going to pray for your church, and you're going to pray that your vision starts to change to the point where you're not so much an attender at a church. There's really no such thing as Pathway Church. It's just a way to identify where the mail goes here. That is basically it.
So I need to cancel my I love my church T-shirts.
Yeah, that needs to go.
Yeah.
That needs to go.
Doesn't every ministry have to have a fancy T-shirt?
And man.
The chat makes a small point that says perhaps the barrier is the building at the center of the ecosystem instead of Jesus at the center. It's not intentionally, but it's truth, right? And maybe that's just something for leaders to keep in mind, right? That people are drawn to that. It's not like this decision just happened 5 years ago, right? This is the way the church, if you read the book of Acts, how the church started had nothing to do with buildings. So circa here we are 2,000 years later, and we are very building-centric. Right, and it's actually a very careful place that Pathway Church, as attenders here, we're kind of walking into. We've never had a building, and it's new and it's exciting, and you know, I think everybody goes into it with it's going to give us excellent places to jump off ministries for Jesus. We can invite people in, we can do all this stuff, but like if Jesus leaves the center of that, then we end up like everybody we've just railed against for the last half hour.
Do you know what I love best about our new building?
No,
it is a beat up, torn up piece of junk. Old used warehouse that nobody else wanted, and they've been trying to get rid of forever. And they're like, well, nobody else wants it. Will you take it? I'm like, oh, I guess we'll look at it.
and it is a piece of junk. I mean, there is nothing. We're going to be putting lipstick on a pig, and we're going to. And so I can't see how can we possibly fall in love with that building. It's going to be a launching pad for ministry.
Now, Dan, not everyone shares the same idea. Here's the deal.
They just destroyed the building. Words.
Because I know this is a barrier for people, right? I know this is a barrier for people because I've talked to people that attend our church that, like, you know, I feel like we could really get moving in the right direction if we had a building. Wrong.
And it'll be a great tool. It will.
It's a great...
If we keep that mindset, it's a tool.
It's a great tool. It's not the whole box.
Right.
You know what I'm saying? It's not the cabinet where all the tools go.
It's a launching
pad. It's
just
one of the tools, right? And so I guess... And it's not like I'm against the building, okay? I'm not against the building.
Yeah.
But, like, it really has to be just the tool and not the entire cabinet because that's not what it is. And sometimes I fear that and not a lot of churches, I mean, there's churches that go through this, but this is just more relevant for us because we're heading that direction. Most people go to a church that already has a building. But that's some of the issue, too. Look at all the struggles that they don't go through that we appreciate when a building shows up, right? And so, like, they want to do a fun event. They always know where it's going to be. It's crapshoot. Is this booked? Is this booked? Where are we going to do
where
this?
Where can we ranch?
We have no idea.
Can we go to this place?
No one has any idea.
Nobody wants us.
Anyway, just make sure that your church building or your church in general is not where you're attending, but it's something that you're part of. And the people say, "Where do you go to church?" And you say, "I meet with all my friends to talk about God here. This is where we go." You know, but it's not a building. It is not. It's in service 24/7 because the people are always living and breathing, and that's basically the gist of it. You're listening to Life from the Path on lifefromthepath.org. Listen, if you're catching us on KTIA 99.3, we're glad to have you involved. Just a heads up, some of our sponsors that are keeping us on the air out there is Bob Eisenhower with the Eisenhower Real Estate Team. I actually talked to Bob a little earlier this week. He's going to be on the show in the next couple weeks along with his brother. His brother just got his real estate license, and so here's the deal. I used the Eisenhowers when I sold my house and bought the house that I lived in afterwards. And it was really simple. I heard a bunch of nightmares on how the thing was going to go and that it was going to be long drawn out. It was going to be terrible. And I just didn't have any of those problems. It went really smooth. Bob was always super cool. He was nice. He was honest. And if you're in the market to buy or sell a house, please get a hold of Bob Eisenhower at the Eisenhower team. He did right by me. He's been on the show. He's a great guy to talk to. And so I recommend that you go check that out. Also recommend that you check out Westfield Veterinary Hospital here in Johnston. I believe it's westfieldvet.com. But they take care of all your dog, cat, goat. I don't know. I have goats. I don't know how many of you guys have goats. I have goats.
I do not.
I do not have goats either.
Don't make me extol the virtues of goats, but I'll tell you one thing. I have not used the weed eater all year. All year. Because the goats just take care of it. Of course, they'll also eat you if you don't watch them. In fact, our biggest goat, I call her the mama goat, she bites my hand when she wants petted because she knows that I'll do it. Like, to shoo her away, I have to almost pet her, and so she considers that affection and will bite you. Anyway, take your goat biter to the Westfield Vet. They know everything there is to know about goats, dogs, cats, spiders, bunnies. I don't care. They do a great job. I've actually used them personally for the last 5-6 years. They're great guys. They're honest. They'll take care of you. And so go check out westfieldvet.com. Popping up next on the show, we're looking at big money. Sorry, I forgot about that. we're moving into the Pope style advice. The arena on Pope style advice is there's groups. I mean, large amounts, 10,000 people have mistaken you for the Pope. I'm not really sure how it happened. There'd been a newsletter, a commercial, or something. Something has really gone foul where they think that wherever you are, that's the location of where the Pope is, and they've showed up on your lawn. And they're going to need some advice, very much like the Pontiff gives out with his friendly parade wave, and he's got to tell you something that is going to extol virtues onto your life. Except for, it's not the Pope, it happens to be John Bova. And so John Bova's got some Pope-style advice that is hopefully going to appease the masses and move these people off his lawn. John Bova.
To be fair to the people that have shown up on my lawn, I was wearing a very, very decorative robe when I went out to get the paper this morning, so I can see where they're coming from.
And a hat.
Yeah, and a hat. It was a cool hat. I'm not going to comment on the hat any more than that. So, like I said earlier on in the show, my Pope-style advice today is going to be a little bit different than my normal style. I normally try and... I'm not good at the whole rebuking thing and talking straight to people. I'm normally the happy guy.
Me neither.
Mike is normally the happy guy as well, so I'm going to have to take over for that. But through conversations that I've had this week, and some disturbing conversations and some disturbing things that I've seen, not commenting on anyone specifically in society or anyone specifically in my personal life, but just some stuff that I've seen this week has kind of ticked me off. I got to be honest. Kind of ticked me off, and I don't think it's biblical at all, and I don't think it's from God, and I think it's just messed up that people are doing this. Not my advice, but that people are doing this. But,
okay. Good. I'm going to have to start drawing lines.
This is messed up, but here you go.
Here's the deal. You do not decide who deserves the love of God or not. It is not on you to decide what person that you've seen in society, what person that you've seen in your life, what dude or gal that you see on the road. You do not have the authority to determine if they deserve the love of God or not. And therefore, you do not have the right to say, I'm the one who's just going to say, no, I'm not going to talk to that person about God. Because if we had the whole, who deserves the love of God or not, none of us do. Absolutely none of us deserve it. We get it through the grace of God and through the sacrifice that Jesus did. But you do not have the right to determine who does it. And I say this because I see people that have been just wholeheartedly judging people and determining whether or not they're going to talk to them about God, and have honestly said, you know, I'm not going to talk to them about God because I heard they did this. Hmm. And I'm not going to go and talk to them because, you know, I saw this. Who the heck are you? Who do you think you are that you have the right to say that? Because you don't. You need to look at yourself and realize that someone loved on you. God loves on you on an everyday basis, every second, knowing exactly what you have done, what you are going to do, and what you're doing right now, and still loves you unconditionally. Yet you think you have the gall to say that they don't deserve the love of God. Seriously, who do you think you are? You are a man or a woman. You are a son or a daughter of Christ. And in that alone, every single person deserves to be talked to. Every single person deserves the love of God and deserves to hear that Jesus loves them more than they could ever even fathom. They think they know about love that they don't. We will never understand the kind of love that God has for us, and they deserve to know that, regardless of what they've done, who they are, who they mean to, what they mean to you, who they are to you, what they've done to you, what they haven't done to you. They deserve it. That's my Pope-style advice.
Okay, what was your Pope-style advice then?
My Pope-style advice is you don't have the right to determine who gets the love of God or not.
You need to tell everybody.
Yeah, you need to tell everybody. It is not your decision.
Oh, man. I mean, I feel like I failed at that. I ran into like 50 people today.
Then you failed at that, yeah.
Dang.
But on that premise alone, so did I. And this advice is also to myself, so.
Yeah, but I mean, man, I feel kind of burdened now when you're saying, like, Who I think I am? I should have said something to somebody. I mean,
that guy doesn't deserve it.
That guy, yeah, when you stop yourself and you even have the conscious thought of, you know, I heard that they're doing this, or I heard that they've done this.
So someone that you like know, I mean, not like a stranger on the street, but someone you know, and they're living a lifestyle that you don't agree with.
Yeah.
That you would say, I'm going to just go ahead and block God from them.
Right.
That's insane.
Yes. I agree entirely. That's where this is coming from.
That's like Jesus on the cross and saying, you know, yeah, I was going to offer you to see you in paradise today, but no way.
I heard you're a thief. You're not coming up.
Word on
me.
The street is you're a thief. Yeah.
It's sad that is even crossing someone's mind. That they have the pompous view that they would be able to say, you know, I don't think I'm going to talk to them about that. I've heard they're doing this. That is pathetic. That is unloving. That is so wicked.
Yeah, I can't imagine someone consciously thinking that, let alone saying it.
I don't think that. Sometimes I think it's just not the right time.
Yeah, you got to be discern.
Obviously,
time,
yeah,
and,
discernment
and, yeah.
is a big deal. Obviously.
Yeah, but you're like, who do you think you are? And then you made me feel bad, and like maybe I'm just trying.
Mike, I think you're on the right track if you're not consciously saying they don't deserve God. Thanks. I'm not going to talk to them.
Thanks, Booba.
I think you're on the right track. If you're going through the discernment of, you know, am I the one that God's going to put in front of that person?
Feeling like a real schmuck there for a minute.
You know, if you're consciously saying to yourself, you know, if I'm the one that God wants there, I'm going to be there. But if God wants somebody else, I'm staying out of it.
Here's the thing, and maybe the other people take different tacks in this, but like, the more obvious of a sinful lifestyle you have, the more excited I am to tell you about Jesus. Because I feel like, you know, He can redeem a lot. And so, like, if you're like, man, I've had a previous blah, 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 I'm like, great. He can redeem just that much, plus more.
I have always thought it'd be the coolest thing ever to go down in an area where there's prostitutes and hire a prostitute and say, here's the deal. I don't know how much money. How much money does it take an hour of your time? I'm not going to touch you. Okay, I just want to talk to you. And tell them the gospel. But the thing is, they don't look at me like I'm the biggest nerd in the world. They're like, yeah, you don't even know how to talk to a prostitute.
Yeah.
You're right.
I'm not into that, dude.
I'm not into the whole talking thing.
But also, I figured I'd be the guy who, that's like the police, undercover police. No, really, I was going to tell you about
Seriously,
Jesus.
Yeah. I have a Bible in
front cover. Yeah, exactly. I'd
tell
be on the newspapers.
So
that's why I haven't
done
it. And or to go to the drug dealer and say, hey, man, I got some stuff, but I want to get some stuff. And somehow introduce that. See, I don't know how to talk
to
him.
Dan, do not go to any drug dealers and say,
see,
I've got
because they'll
stuff.
Shoot me. They're like,
they will shoot stuff.
But I would love to explain to them that God loves them and that they could find a better way.
I know the apostles were beaten for Christ, but I think you were
not because they were dwarfs.
Crap beat out of you. And then just a back alley downtown.
Yeah.
Here's
the
because
thing.
You walked up to somebody and said, I got the stuff.
There's portions that there's people that want to do an outreach ministry, and there's people that you just need to lead somewhere else. Maybe you should be on the internal ministry.
Yeah. I'll do the VBS.
Yeah, I'm not the guy who should, I'm not the guy who should go to the nightclubs and try and get people for God. I'm just not him. Yeah.
What's shaking, home skillet? You know my Jesus?
How are you, local teenager? It's not going to work.
Okay, you're listening to Life from the Path on LifeFromTheBath.org. If you're interested in some heavy intellectual business, go ahead and head over to the chat on LifeFromTheBath.org. Stuff above my head is happening. Go check that out and throw your 2 cents worth
stuff
in.
Above your
the
head
funny part out. Is that Ben is remotely watching the show and also commenting under the handle Life from the Path. And so it appears that I am arguing with him on some occasion. But if you are not aware that there's two of us, it appears that I'm arguing with myself.
That's
so
awesome.
That is just something to keep in mind. Make sure you check out the podcast at www.lifefromthepath.org. You can subscribe to the podcast. You can check out past shows. Here's the deal. I happened to resurrect the Life from the Path Christmas extravaganza earlier today. And I tell you what, Jeff Arundale did a fantastic job.
Yes, he did.
We had like
absolutely
maybe 15 people at this concert.
That was that big blizzard.
It was a huge blizzard.
Yeah.
I mean, it was like 12 feet. It literally took me 3 hours to drive home, and I live half hour away. It took forever, and it was a terrible mess. But the music, I've admitted this before, but sometimes if music is really good, I weep. And there's a couple songs on this Christmas extravaganza where I weep. And I had to actually circle the roads at my house to not appear as if I'd been weeping in my own vehicle. And so,
your mascara was running.
Otherwise, the wife gets concerned. The kids are upset. What is wrong with Dad, they say. And so here's the deal. It's really excellent. Ben's gonna take care of some stuff. We're going to see if we can get some stuff out to you. We're going to try to boost this stuff, get some radio airplay somewhere. Arundale, Randy from Sanctified did a lot of the lead singing work, and the man is just amazing, and they all do it with a heart for Jesus Christ. And like the my favorite song on that entire Christmas extravaganza was they did Gloria or Angels We Have Heard on High, and it was just an amazing tune. And if you're not much of a hands in the air worshiper, at least you can sit in your car and cry. And so that's what I do. And so if I'd recommend that we're going to try to get it pumped out so you can either get it commercially or we can get it out to you somehow. But it was just an excellent time. We're going to do it again this year. The plans aren't really concrete yet. But be looking forward to Life from the Path is going to put on a Christmas extravaganza. I'm pretty sure we got Arundale concreted back in to do the house band work. But it really was an amazing time.
It was.
And I know the people that were there were just blown away by it. And it was just an awesome time to worship and be with people around you. So it was excellent. Dear Life from the Path, my mother is in her mid-50s. She's a wonderful woman, but she makes us late for everything. My husband and children, my siblings, and I often attend family functions and other events as a group. When we go to pick up Mom, she announces she has just a few chores she wants to do first, and they take forever. We are not a few minutes late. We're significantly late, and sometimes miss events altogether. These have included weddings and funerals, and we have wasted hundreds of dollars on tickets to missed events. She'll often make a show of apologizing, but her behavior never changes. We have stopped inviting Mom to some events, but she makes us feel guilty if we don't take her to a family event. We asked her friends about this behavior. They say she never pulls these stunts when they pick her up for things. When we talk to Mom about it, she insists she needs to get things done ahead of time. Her house isn't messy, nor is it known for being overly tidy. She's in good mental and physical health. We're fresh out of ideas how to deal with this. Help. Okay, boys. Late Mama. Mama makes everything late. Can't seem to get anywhere on time.
Simple solution. Get there earlier.
How early? Missed entire events.
Yeah, and hours upon hours of time has been missed because of this lady.
How far is your loyalty to your mother go? You know what I'm saying? All right, tickets to the Chiefs game. Mom, you got 5 minutes.
And yeah, I was going to say, we're you show up. Mom says, I've got a few chores to do. You set a definitive time period. Mom, you have 10 minutes to get this done. Or I'm sorry you brought this on us. We are all going to look rude if we keep showing up late. You have 10 minutes and we leave you.
Oh, I don't want to look rude. Oh,
I don't care, Mom. You've got 10 minutes and we're leaving you.
Yeah, she's acting like a child, so treat her like a child. If my child was doing that, I would give her at a specific time. We're leaving at X time and then leave. I've done it.
We will be there at 11:05. We will be on the road at 11:15. Yeah. You have 10 minutes to get your chores done.
If you're coming,
and we're
with
leaving
us.
You.
Yep.
I did not raise you to talk to me like this, Daniel. Especially in front of your friends.
These aren't my friends.
This is your daughter-in-law and your grandkids.
I would encourage her to find a taxi. This is when we're leaving. She can find another ride. But I'm not going to miss Uncle Herbert's funeral,
right? Exactly.
Or little Susie's wedding.
Yeah, you've got a funeral because you have a chore. You'll miss because of this. I can't imagine trying to explain that to the family who invited you to the funeral. Yeah. Mom had some chores to do.
Yeah.
We showed up on time.
She had some hair in her brush, and she had to get that all cleaned out.
I was too much of a pansy to tell her, clean your sink when we get home.
Just a quick sidebar. Do you guys ever take the hair out of the hairbrush and make a mustache out of it?
That's the creepiest thing I've ever heard in my entire life.
I may have done that before.
You're darn right you have.
I can honestly say I haven't.
Because you know that's good times. My kids,
making a mustache
my kids
out of
love
the hair
it. My kids
that has
absolutely
been pulled
love it.
Out of
you get a little
head.
Tape and you stick it all on there.
Yep.
Oh, that is the grossest thing.
And you can twirl it. Oh, it's awesome.
Snidely whiplash your mustache.
It helps
brush.
If there's a lady living at your house. If it's dude hair, it's not very long and it's not very fun. But if you can get to, like I do it with my wife's hair and the kids just think it's the best.
I feel like you should grow a mustache, Mike. Just that's my advice for you if you are riding into your life on the path.
Yeah.
Why should I stop putting hairbrush hair as a mustache on my face?
I'm sorry. I'm not following what you're saying. The final advice was, here's what Secular's advice was. It is interesting that your mother doesn't behave this way with her friends. That tells me her behavior is controlling. I think she probably does this with her friends. Her friends are probably old and they just forget about it. although it's hard to understand what perverse pleasure she gets out of it. Also, here's the deal. Some people are wired just to be not very respectful of time constraints.
Yeah,
I am one of those people. I wish I wasn't that way. I just am. I could wake up 45 minutes late for work, and I would walk at the exact same pace as if I was 2 hours early. I don't have any giddy up in my go. I just don't. It's just the pace I move. I'm not that worried about it. I always figure we'll just deal with it when we get there. There's nothing else we can do now. It's a cut and shuffle kind of attitude. I feel like Mom might be that same way. I'm already late. There's not much else I can do.
I have some family members who just are terrible time. They just don't. They have no concept of how to budget their time. It's going to take me half an hour to get there. I have an hour. I'm going to plan 45 minutes worth of activities and chores. And they don't think of the fact that that will make me late. Mm-hmm. And so I've been known to just leave.
Just to make sure I'm on the same page as you, Mike, did you say that you think her friends just don't remember that she spent that much time doing chores?
Because they're elderly?
Because they're elderly. They just forgot about the 2 hours that they were there waiting to go to the concert. Just checking.
Tessa Lugo's in the... She's on board with this?
Making sure we're on the same page. Okay. I had to deal with this personally with my mom. My mom was the same way every time, if I was honestly going to pick her up when I had moved out, or if we were in the same household, my mom knew exactly when we were leaving. We had given her 5 hours, but, we wake up at 6. Mom, we're leaving at 11 to get to grandma's at noon. At 10:45, she starts getting ready. I don't get it. I'm not saying I'm the most poignant person on the planet, but I've never been consistently 20 minutes late to every family
thing. I don't think that you
use
the word
ever.
Poignant correctly. I'm sorry, continue.
Whatever. So, it's just, I just, that drives me, I can see where this family's coming from, but I stick to my guns with, give Mom a time frame.
The chat recommends that you just call her friends, since she seems to be on time with them, and have them pick them up and meet you there.
I like
invite
that.
The friends to all family funerals and weddings and everything. Apparently, Mom is cool with being on time with you, so let's go.
Yeah, here's 20 bucks, Earl. Go pick up Mama and get her to the
You're
funeral.
You're not
going to
remember
time.
This anyway, so.
That's right. In fact,
I'm going to promise you $100 because in 2 hours you're not going to remember the $100.
And I don't owe you anything.
Exactly.
Remember that Metamucil you forgot to get me? Okay.
Earl goes back, you owe me $100. Earl, you don't know what you're talking about. I never said that.
You don't know that, Earl. You're old. Dear Life from the Path, I'm 8 years old and in second grade. I'm writing because I'm being bullied at school. I'm really smart, and at my school, that's a really bad thing. I try hard to be nice, but here, that's worse than being smart. The teachers didn't help me with the bullies, so I stopped telling them. My mom told everyone she could about the bullies, but nobody helps. It keeps getting worse over time. Every day, someone picks on me, pushes me, or makes fun of me. Please help me.
That's a tough situation to be in, first off. We all know that bullying is becoming a more and more serious issue, and it's being neglected to be taken care of by officials in the school. In a perfect world, a kid can talk to their teachers, and the teachers just fix it. And the teachers bring in the parents. I honestly, since your teachers aren't doing anything, I would recommend talking to your parents and seeing if they can actually go to the school. And I know that that may have mom take a day off of work or anything like that, and she may not be able to do that. But if she can go into the school and honestly talk to your teachers and sit down and have a meeting with them saying that you are getting honest complaints about the fact that you're being bullied by the kids in your school, then mom needs to step up. Mom or dad need to step up and help you out more than they have so far.
Damn.
Send your letters to Mike Foost. Here's the deal. Bullying is no worse than it's ever been. Back in the day, bullying was beating the crap out of someone. Okay, I don't say it doesn't happen once in a while, but I think today we are so sissified that someone like calls me a name or threatens me. We get all whiny, and you're like, we cannot handle our society. This young generation cannot handle. Guess what? Life is some people don't like you. That's just life. Guess what? Grow up. Okay. Now, if you're 8 years old, here's the deal. You're smarter than these kids. So outsmart them. Use what you have. Use the tools you have. And I don't know what that means. I don't know the setting. If he's taking the bus, find it. I don't know. This guy is going to grow up and he's going to be all of their bosses. All right. He'll be their boss. So you're going to be fine, kid. Be strong. Be brave. Find a way to outsmart these kids, whatever that means. But there is legitimate bullying going on. Don't get me wrong. And there's some stuff that needs to stop. But, I really struggle with this current bullying thing. I think it's just become this politically correct thing that people are throwing around. And, he needs to hire some older kids to come and beat those kids up.
I think we have two very different ways of dealing with bullying.
Boova didn't say anything like that.
That's what I'm saying. So send your letters to Mike Foost. He was feeding me this information.
So I agree with you that I think that society is putting a spotlight on bullying right now. I wouldn't disagree with that. I would agree that bullying is the same concept as it was 20, 30, 40, 50, 60 years ago. So whatever. When public schools started, bullying was the same thing. However, I think if this kid is to the point where he or she is obviously in a hole and feels terrible about what he or she is having to go through, I don't think buck up and just take care of it is going
to
fix
it. Because he's been told to feel terrible about it. That's what all of culture is saying. Oh, it's so awful. Everybody needs to help you. It's like, you know what? Figure out a way to get through this. I mean, I had people who were mean to me. I did not run home whining, thinking, oh, bullies. I just thought I avoided them. I went to different places. I did different things. Sometimes you couldn't help it, and it happened, and they punched me and did all that stuff. It's like, whatever. I seem to have turned out okay.
You're listening to Live from the Path on livefromthepath.org. Thank you very much for listening. If you're on the KTI broadcast, we got to let you go. Like a sparrow leaving its mama's nest, time for you to go. If you want to check out exclusive content, check out the podcast. We're going to keep on rolling. We got a little bit of show left. This bullying conversation isn't done. I haven't put my pompous spin on it. And so we're going to talk about that. We got a couple more bits of advice left. But if you're listening on the KTIA audience, we gotta cut you loose. So thank you. You guys have a good week. We'll talk to you next week. All right, right on. Okay. All right, I didn't really catch the rest of what Dan was saying. I was doing the slow fade.
Yeah, yeah.
And I was paying attention to my fading techniques.
There's a guy right now in a local school that acts completely different than everybody else on purpose. Now, you know, hey, so what? He's different. Whatever. I don't care. But then he throws it in their faces, and if anyone comes after him and says something, he runs immediately about how the bullies are after him. He needs some bullies in his life. This guy does. And that's what I think a lot of culture has done, is people want to be just bizarre and have everybody not only accept them but praise them for being just plain weird. And
I think it's okay. I think in some extreme circumstances where someone is just trying to be bizarre just for the sake of attention.
Yeah, yeah.
I wouldn't agree that they need bullies, but
that might be a little extreme.
I think I understand partially where you're coming from, but there are honest people who are just being bullied for absolutely nothing, absolutely nothing. And I'm not saying that there's something really we can do to launch this whole, you know, anti-bullying program where we fix it entirely, but I think that there are kids that maybe it's society that's bringing them to this, but this is, it seems to be a serious problem that's taking its toll. Whether it's justified or not that it's taking a toll is not the situation at all. The fact of the matter is, it is taking a toll on these kids. How can we fix that?
Some kids just need to be punched in the face. If they're bullying someone, somebody needs to just, you just have to face them.
I did that.
Mm-hmm.
And I wish I could take back every time I hit a bully.
I wish I could have taken pictures.
I put people in lockers. I put people in...
Well, you were a bully. Someone needed to punch you.
No. I was being bullied, so people would mess with me, would make fun of me, would fizzle.
Who bullies a man your size? That's foolish.
Believe it or not, it really did happen. I'm not lying about this. I got bullied in school. I got told by friends and by different peers and different influences in my life to retaliate. Mm. And because I was so big, I was perfectly able to do so. I've broken kids' feet. I've put people through.
They deserved it.
Do they have
lockers.
Shoes on?
Yeah.
How'd you do that?
One kid called me a big fat ogre and I stomped on his foot and broke it.
That is awesome.
He was laying on the ground doing doing his stretches in gym, and I broke his foot and he wasn't able to play football that year.
Well, he shouldn't have. And if he kept his big fat mouth shut, he wouldn't have had that problem.
I agree that there was a problem that he was saying anything to me. I agree that the bullies need to be retaliated against, but if we're encouraging, hey, bully them back, it's just going to create more and more bullying, and all that's going to happen is more and more kids are going to get hit in the face, and that's not going to fix
our
problem.
And then they'll learn eventually.
How is that going to help the 8-year-old that's writing into us right now, though?
Well...
What would you say to the kid that's saying, hey, I'm a little bit smarter than everybody, I'm nice to people, and that's looked down on. Do I punch everyone that's mean to me in the face?
I want
to
know, how do people know he's smarter than them? Does he go around...
Probably raising his hand in class, and yeah. That's enough.
I mean, some of us people just look at us and they can tell we're smart. I get that.
Yes, everybody looks at Dan Hudson and knows that he's the smart one that was in class. Same with me. But, you know, I wouldn't be surprised if it's literally he's just answering more than everyone else questions in class. And because of that, he's being picked on when he leaves class.
Yeah.
Because that kind of stuff happened, not necessarily that specific situation, but that kind of stuff happened to me. And it was
terrible. It happens to everybody at some level. So,
and I understand.
It's all different. Every one of us has something you could pick on.
I mean,
you know, I'm incredibly good looking. And sometimes
it's
drew attention.
For all of us.
It was uncomfortable, yeah. And so people tried to scar me, and they just wouldn't work.
Dan, I feel like you're the opposite of most kids, where you got made fun of for your really great traits, and I'm glad that happened to you. Dan's too pretty. We need to make fun of him. Dan's way too smart. We need to make fun of him.
I mean, I was just a big
old
dork.
A good school
I had
experience.
A big nose. It was crooked. You know, I mean, I had all kinds of stuff. Everybody has stuff. You know, but you know what? You just
Agree, but the problem that I don't think the fix is turn your back on it, and I don't think the fix is, you know, man up. Yeah. I don't think that's the fix.
It's a combination of the two. Turn your back, and then when they come closer, punch them in the face.
And make sure you have the brass knuckles.
When they keep coming at you, hit them in the face.
Make them think you gave up.
Yeah. Here's the deal.
It's a Christmas story.
Some of this is a legitimate bullying problem. Yeah, there's bullies. This kid isn't really experiencing one. An 8-year-old that has a perspective that they're smarter than everybody else is being fed this by their parents. You really should not do that. There's nothing wrong with encouraging your children and telling them that they are smart or that they're doing well or you're proud of them. But when you start saying, you're smarter than everyone else, an 8-year-old does not do an independent study of his classmates that says, am I smarter than you? Okay, great. I'll mark you down as being dumb. Thank you. And then go through every person in the class to figure that out. Their parents told them that. right? The same, everything that he says, look, I'm smart and I'm nice. I'm nicer than everybody. I'm smarter than everybody. That's information that's gathered from someone else apart from you. And the people that you're talking about don't offer up that kind of information. That's right. He's also very humble. He's also a very humble man.
His smarts are only outweighed by his humility.
So yes, here's the problem. He's 8 years old. This is not his deal. This is hard to deal with, right? Like, I don't care who you are. I don't care what brand of self-esteem that you're currently subscribing to. It's hard to go somewhere and have everyone hate you. That stinks. It's hard to deal with. You can do it with a smile on your face, but it doesn't make it hurt any less. It makes it hard. And so the kid's in a bad place. True. Any type of words or any type of, making fun of him or picking on him, that's not cause for a fight. It's just not. Sticks and stones. Chat's right. Sticks and stones.
Yeah.
It's words.
I'm with you there.
Drop it. You're going to have to get thicker skin than that. It's not going to change when you're 30. It's not going to change when you're 80. People are going to call you old until you forget things, like what time you're supposed to be somewhere. It's just going to keep happening to you. Learn to deal with that, right? And frankly, I mean, I'm not talking like old man toughing you up, you know, where your old man sits down and wraps you on the ears for 10 minutes to kind of make you a man. I'm just talking about
were the days.
You need thicker skin. If parents need to teach their kids how to have thicker skin, do that, right? And some of the problem that we have, not only within the church, but in basically society in general, is people have a terrible time with authority. People have a terrible time taking direction because they've been told they were great. Yep. Why would I submit to anybody, any type of authority, be it police, spiritual authority, my parents, their parents, grandparents, teachers, whatever, because I've been told I'm awesome and I have no room for improvement. And so there'd be no reason for me to humble myself to anybody, especially a God, because as far as I could tell, me and him are the same being. Because of the self-esteem massage that you grow up kids with. I'm not saying to be mean to your kids. I'm saying be honest with them, right? Be honest with your kids. If they're socially awkward, help them. But tell them where their proclivities are, right? If they're like, when you show up and want to play with a group of kids and you don't want to play what they're playing and you insist on playing only what you're playing, I wouldn't want to play with you either. Let's start there.
Yeah. Right?
Let's start there. Maybe we can learn how to get along with people. Now, here's the thing. If the kid starts showing up with marks on him, if he starts getting punched in the face, if he starts getting harassed, take it to the principal. If the principal doesn't listen, take it to the superintendent. If the superintendent doesn't listen, take it to the sheriff. Keep taking it places. Eventually, the kid's probably going to, maybe not when he's 8, but by the time that he's 12, he might have to throw a punch. He might have to. You know what I'm saying? A line happens. I'm generally under the rule of thumb is a man throws a punch when the reputation of his wife or his kids or their safety is in danger. Personal pride does not get a punch. That's my stance on it. I don't know. You could fall either way about that. I'm not real big on machismo and dude pride, and you're not going to talk to me that way. Give it up. You're a humble servant of Jesus Christ. You're really not anything fancy to be sticking up for your own self-esteem. Okay? If you're going to hurt my wife or you're going to hurt my kids, if we got to solve this thing with a couple knuckles, then that's going to be the deal. But if someone has to make fun of you or likes to shove you and make you look silly, you know that's not the truth. Be a grown man and walk away from it. Okay? If it starts to be an effect of someone else's personal safety, get in there like a man and throw a punch if you got to. But as far as the 8-year-old kid goes, he could really use some better advice besides the one that he's getting. If it's just name calling, he's going to have to suck that up. He's just going to have to suck that up, right? If it gets worse when he gets older, he's going to have to knee some guy in the business. I don't care what he does, but it's got to have to end somewhere. So that's my advice. I don't know that I'd go to the school and start an anti-bullying campaign. You can't even accidentally bump a guy into a locker anymore without getting kicked out of school. There's perfectly innocent kids that are just on the physical side that's been booted out of school for, you know, ridiculous overreactions. People that protect their kids too much that don't allow them to be in a conflict, so they never figure out how to solve it. It's not helpful. We got time for one more here. Dear Life from the Past.
What did Secular
say? Oh, right. I'm sorry. Secular says, because you haven't told your teachers that the bullying hasn't stopped, they may think that it's no longer going on. I don't think that's true. Tell them again what you are experiencing. Be sure your mother knows. She should discuss this with your teacher. If things don't get better, she needs to talk to the principal and, if necessary, the school board. Many schools offer programs that discourage bullying. I hope so. And train students who can help. At last resort, your mother should consult a lawyer. You have the right to an education that's free from this kind of pressure. Lawsuits have been filed and won because school districts didn't give the attention they should have. Be sure to show this to your mother and tell her you wrote it.
I think the parents really need to work with this child and teach him some coping skills. Basically, like you said, you just got to suck it up. You got to have some thick skin. And but he's got to learn how. And I understand that. He hasn't been taught.
Yeah, I mean,
that.
He's 8. If he was 25, we'd be having a different conversation, right? He's 8. He's a product of his environment at this point. You know, there's a lot of parenting that needs to be going on here.
I mean, guess what? People are mean. Guess what? We live in a fallen world. People who don't know God do things that are godless.
Dear Life from the Path, last one. My wife and I disagree about when and where it is acceptable to yawn. I believe a public yawn during dinner or conversation is not appropriate. She sees no reason why a natural human trait such as yawning should be stifled. Again, my assertion is that yawning denotes boredom or lack of interest in what people are conversing about or doing. What are your thoughts? Tessa Lugo, your thoughts?
I really don't see the problem with yawning.
Yawn at any time.
Well, I mean, I guess if someone's like in a deep conversation and you're staring at them, it's probably kind of rude to yawn.
Right.
But I mean, in a situation like this, I don't see a problem
like
with
in a
yawning.
Professional radio studio?
Well, not
talking
into the microphones.
Millions of
John Buba.
I'm having trouble taking this one seriously. I really am, because right after, as you're reading that, I started yawning.
Right.
And I was
offended.
I would expect all of you to start yawning as I'm talking, as you normally do.
It just keeps going on.
Yeah, it just keeps on going. I think the fact that you and your wife are actually having a conversation about this is actually kind of ridiculous. I don't see a problem with yawning. I don't. I think that if you accidentally yawn in front of someone who's having a conversation with you that's deep and in thought, you can explain it away as, hey, that wasn't just me being bored with your conversation. If I were bored with your conversation, I would have tried to get out of this conversation about 15 minutes ago. I don't see a problem with yawning anywhere.
I think the dude that's like, again, my assertion is that yawning denotes boredom. Again, I'm right. I don't want you to miss how right I am.
Did you notice that I'm right about this?
Hold on. Here's the deal. If you got to yawn, go ahead and do that. Yeah, there might be times when you want to ignore it. Like if you're getting some kind of chewing at work because you screwed something up or cost them big money, and they're like, you cost us big money, and blah, blah, and you're like, there's a line between, hey, I really got to yawn, and that's foolish, right? That's
same thing. You can kind of
suppress it.
Suppress it.
Here's the thing. There's other bodily functions that fall under the same category. Perfectly natural for the human body to go through. Maybe not the best time. You know what I'm saying?
Yeah. Like, you should be astonished that happened. It's just,
there's a lot of things that this falls under. So here's the deal. Look, I mean, will you just be a full human being and look what's going on around you? You know, maybe it's time. Maybe it ain't. Put two thoughts together and come up with a good time to do it.
I always tried to not yawn like in class. You know, I would hide it. I'd like, it was like giving some boring math.
Because then the kids in the back are like, hey, it's the yawner. Look, everybody, he's a yawner.
I don't want to take the teacher down any further. They're already, you know, pretty dry and distracting. But everybody's bored. Then they even get worse. So I would just try to pretend like I was paying attention.
One of my jobs is to teach classes. I'm a corporate trainer. That's what I do. If anyone yawns at my class, I'm not offended.
Really?
If you fall asleep in my class, we'll be having a conversation, and I do sly little things, like I drop a pen next to them and then use their chair to help myself up and wiggle the chair as I'm getting up.
Hey, people hate that, man.
No, it's people actually hate being called out in front of their peers.
Yeah, why don't you just leave me sleep for a bit?
No, you need to learn what I'm teaching you.
Yeah, but that's the yawns, is that the most arrogant thing I've ever heard? You need
my
what
words
I'm
are gold.
If I were saying it from a standpoint of this is the word of my mouth, yes, that would be pompous. But if I'm saying it from, I am teaching from a guide that is going to get you to do your job correctly, no, it is not pompous to say you need to learn.
Hey,
this.
Maybe they don't want your $12 an hour. Why don't you lose the attitude?
Fine. Then they are in the wrong training class and they need to leave.
Let's get the they're going to get the advice real quick here.
This bores me.
I can't.
I'm really bored of this PowerPoint.
Take anymore. Secular says, my thoughts are similar to an observation made by English writer G.K. Chesterton, who said, a yawn is a silent shout. I've never seen anyone who is intensely interested in something yawn. And to do it in the presence of others implies in the presence of others, blah, 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 implies that the yawner is tired, bored, or otherwise not fully engaged. Basically, he's saying, look, if you're yawning, it makes it look like you're not paying attention.
It really is true. I don't think I've ever yawned when I was, like, intently engaged in whatever.
I did it at my wedding.
I'm
this boring woman's in your wedding.
I'm wholeheartedly exhausted. and been paying as much attention as I possibly can to something and yawned before. And it was nothing against the person I was talking to. It wasn't that I was not paying attention to them. It was I didn't get sleep last night. I'm sorry.
Sometimes I yawn just to be silly. Just to be do a silly thing.
Just to see how far it spreads.
Yeah. They're like, hey, Mike, you want to go to lunch? And then don't say anything. You just kind of let it sit there for a while.
People are just sitting there like, is that a... that a no?
Be bold. Break a roof.
Bold.
Break a roof.
Break a roof, exactly.
Do a yawn. You're listening to Life from the Path on lifefromthepath.org. Check out the podcast. Check out the past performances. Check out the Christmas extravaganza. Check out the show, for heaven's sakes, from beginning to end.
Just check out.
Thanks for checking out. We'll catch you next week.